Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And today we're devoting the show to special coverage of the House Intelligence Committee hearing on Russian meddling in the 2016 election and the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on whether to confirm Judge Neil Gorsuch for a seat on the Supreme Court. The Gorsuch hearing is scheduled to begin at 11 o'clock. The Russia hearing is scheduled to begin right now and will go live as soon as they do. This hearing will also consider leaks to the press, like about former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn's conversation with the Russian ambassador, which got him fired for lying about it to Vice President Pence, and the add-on issue that Donald Trump has been pushing without evidence that President Obama or his administration ordered surveillance of Trump Tower as a political dirty trick during the campaign. FBI Director James Comey and NSA Director Admiral Mike Rogers will be the central witnesses. With me until they start the hearing is former CIA agent Bob Baer, who knows a thing or two about the intelligence business. His work in the Middle East was the subject of the movie Syriana. He is an intelligence commentator for Time Magazine and CNN, host of Hunting Hitler on the History Channel, by the way, and is author of books including The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower, and Company We Keep, A Husband and Wife True Life Spy Story. Bob, thanks so much for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me back.
So the most suspense, I think, and the question with the most at stake is whether the Trump campaign colluded with Russia, a hostile foreign power, on Russian hacking of the DNC. What would they have to show to demonstrate collusion?
There are a couple things I would look for. It's clear that Trump aides, campaign aides, met with the Russians. I would want to know who those Russians are. Were they intelligence officers? Were they academics? Were they just simply businessmen? Were they exchanging opinions? There's so many what appears to me to be clandestine contacts. It's not like these people were met all in public. Even Sessions met in private with the Russian ambassador, which, I find it impossible to believe that he wasn't aware that that meeting would come up and should have mentioned it in his hearings. I mean, in fact, there's nothing wrong with meeting the Russian ambassador, but once you're in the middle of a maelstrom like this, you want to say, yeah, I did meet him. It was what we talked about. And it's over. You're done with. The fact that he hid it from the hearings, it bothers me. And Stone's contact with the people who hacked Hillary's, the DNC emails.
Roger Stone, the Trump advisor?
I mean, yeah. I mean, you and I aren't in touch with Russian hackers that are controlled by Russian intelligence. It's not a contact you would run across normally. So that bothers me. And the only way really to get to this is get the CIA's version, who these Russians were, what was the nature of the contact, were they using burner phones? Anything that would make this look like a clandestine relationship would point to collusion. Now, the big question is, how is the FBI going to interpret this? I mean, there's a lot of pieces of evidence that I would say, man, that looks like espionage of some sort to me. The FBI, on the other hand, said, well, we don't have a smoking gun, so we're going to say it's benign.
Now, I think we're about to go here. So you and I will come back periodically and talk about what we're hearing. Again, the chief witnesses here, or the two sole witnesses, are going to be Admiral Mike Rogers, who's the head of the NSA, the National Security Agency, and the FBI Director James Comey. They have already taken their seats, and let's listen in to see if this is beginning. All right, it's still kind of background noise, but it'll be any second. You want to talk about the position that Comey is in regarding how much to disclose? Because I'm sure, as a former CIA agent, you're wary about disclosing specifics of intelligence gathering. On the other hand, he put himself in the position with how much he came out with about Hillary Clinton during the campaign.
He's in a tough position. I mean, there's a lot of Democrats. There's a lot of people that dislike Trump that accuse him of throwing the election for Trump. You know, we'll never know that for sure. There's a good case for it, but we'll never know it. To get back to the intelligence, there's also probably a lot of incidental intercepts of calls going to Trump people. What this means is if a KGB officer sitting in Lubyanka, their headquarters, calls a Trump aide, National Security Agency would pick that up. Rogers and Comey would be loath to bring that up at these hearings, if in fact those conversations exist. It would be a political bomb to find out they have records of these conversations, and they might, just like they did of Flynn talking to the Russian ambassador. So there's going to be a lot of sensitive areas.
And Bob, I'm going to jump in because now the committee chairman, Devin Nunes, is starting in with content. Let's listen to the House Intelligence Committee.
But its hostile acts take many forms aside from direct military assaults. For example, the Kremlin is waging an international disinformation campaign through the RT propaganda network, which traffics in anti-American conspiracy theories that rival the extravagant untruths of Soviet-era Pravda. Russia also has a long history of meddling in other countries' election systems and launching cyber attacks on a wide range of countries and industries. The Baltics and other Russian neighbors have long decried these attacks, but their warnings went unheeded in far too many nations' capitals, including our own. The fact that Russia hacked U.S. election-related databases comes as no shock to this committee. We have been closely monitoring Russia's aggression for years. A year ago, I publicly stated that our inability to predict Putin's regime plans and intentions has been the biggest intelligence failure that we've seen since 9/11, and that remains my view today. However, while the indications of Russian measures targeting the U.S. presidential election are deeply troubling, one benefit is already clear. It has focused wide attention on the pressing threats posed by the Russian autocrat. In recent years, committee members have issued repeated and forceful pleas for stronger action against Russian belligerents, but the Obama administration was committed to the notion, against all evidence, that we could reset relations with Putin, and it routinely ignored our warnings. I hope today's hearing will shed light on three important focus points of the committee's investigation on Russia active measures. First, what actions did Russia undertake against the United States during the 2016 election campaign? And did anyone from a political campaign conspire in these activities? Number two, were the communications of officials or associates of any campaign subject to any kind of improper surveillance? The intelligence community has extremely strict procedures for handling information pertaining to any U.S. citizens who are subject even to incidental surveillance, and this committee wants to ensure all surveillance activities have followed all relevant laws, rules, and regulations. Let me be clear. I've been saying this for several weeks. We know there was not a physical wiretap of Trump Tower. However, it's still possible that other surveillance activities were used against President Trump and his associates. Number three, who has leaked classified information? Numerous current and former officials have leaked purportedly classified information in connection to these questions. We aim to determine who has leaked or facilitated leaks of classified information so that these individuals can be brought to justice. I hope that this committee's bipartisan investigation will result in a definitive report on the Russian actions taken during the election campaign. To that end, we encourage anyone who has information about these topics to come forward and speak to the House Intelligence Committee. I again thank the witnesses for helping shed light on these issues, and I will recognize Ranking Member Schiff. He's asked for 15 minutes for his opening statement, so I will go ahead and give him 15 minutes for his opening statement. Mr. Schiff.
Mr. Chairman, I thank you, and I also want to thank Director Comey and Admiral Rogers for appearing before us today as the committee holds its first open hearing into the interference campaign waged against our 2016 presidential election. Last summer, at the height of a bitterly contested and hugely consequential presidential campaign, a foreign adversarial power intervened in an effort to weaken our democracy and to influence the outcome for one candidate and against the other. That foreign adversary was, of course, Russia, and it acted through its intelligence agencies and upon the direct instructions of its autocratic ruler, Vladimir Putin, in order to help Donald J. Trump become the 45th President of the United States. The Russian active measures campaign may have begun as early as 2015, when Russian intelligence services launched a series of spear phishing attacks designed to penetrate the computers of a broad array of Washington-based Democratic and Republican Party organizations, think tanks, and other entities. This continued at least through the winter of 2016. While at first the hacking may have been intended solely for the collection of foreign intelligence, in mid-2016 the Russians weaponized the stolen data and used platforms established by the intel services such as DC Leaks and existing third-party channels like WikiLeaks to dump the documents. The stolen documents were almost uniformly damaging to the candidate Putin despised, Hillary Clinton. And by forcing her campaign to constantly respond to the daily drip of disclosures, the releases greatly benefited Donald Trump's campaign. None of these facts is seriously in question, and they are reflected in the consensus conclusion of our intelligence agencies. We will never know whether the Russian intervention was determinative in such a close election. Indeed, it is unknowable in a campaign in which so many small changes could have dictated a different result. More importantly, and for the purposes of our investigation, it simply does not matter. What does matter is this. The Russians successfully meddled in our democracy, and our intelligence agencies have concluded they will do so again. Ours is not the first democracy to be attacked by the Russians in this way. Russian intelligence has been similarly interfering in the internal and political affairs of our European and other allies for decades. What is striking here is the degree to which the Russians were willing to undertake such an audacious and risky action against the most powerful nation on Earth. That ought to be a warning to us, that if we thought that the Russians would not dare to so blatantly interfere in our affairs, we were wrong. And if we do not do our very best to understand how the Russians accomplished this unprecedented attack on our democracy and what we need to do to protect ourselves in the future, we will only have ourselves to blame. We know a lot about the Russian operation, about the way they amplified the damage their hacking and dumping of stolen documents was causing through the use of slick propaganda like RT, the Kremlin's media arm. But there is a lot we don't know. Most important, we do not yet know whether the Russians had the help of U.S. citizens, including people associated with the Trump campaign. Many of the Trump's campaign personnel, including the president himself, have ties to Russia and Russian interests. This is, of course, no crime. On the other hand, if the Trump campaign, or anyone associated with it, aided or abetted the Russians, it would not only be a serious crime, it would also represent one of the most shocking betrayals of democracy in history. In Europe, where the Russians have a much longer history of political interference, they've used a variety of techniques to undermine democracy. They employed the hacking and dumping of documents. They have also used bribery, blackmail, compromising material, and financial entanglement to secure needed cooperation from individual citizens of targeted countries. The issue of U.S. person involvement is only one of the important matters that the chairman and I have agreed to investigate, and which is memorialized in the detailed and bipartisan scope of investigation that we have signed. We'll also examine whether the intelligence community's assessment of the Russian operation is supported by the raw intelligence, whether the U.S. government responded properly or missed the opportunity to stop this Russian attack much earlier, and whether the leak of information about Michael Flynn or others is indicative of a systemic problem. We have also reviewed whether there is any evidence to support President Trump's claim that he was wiretapped by President Obama in Trump Tower, and found no evidence whatsoever to support that slanderous accusation. And we hope that Director Comey can now put that matter permanently to rest. Today, most of my Democratic colleagues will be exploring with the witnesses the potential involvement of U.S. persons in the Russian attack on our democracy. It is not that we feel the other issues are less important, they are very important, but rather because this issue is least understood by the public. We realize, of course, that the witnesses may not be able to answer many of the questions in open session. They may or may not be willing to disclose even whether there is an investigation. But we hope to present to you, directors, and the public why we believe this is a matter of such gravity that it demands a thorough investigation, not only by us, as we intend to do, but by the FBI as well. Let me give you a short preview of what I expect you'll be asked by our members. Whether the Russian active measures campaign began as nothing more than an attempt to gather intelligence, or was always intended to be more than that, we do not know, and is one of the questions we hope to answer. But we do know this. The months of July and August 2016 appear to have been pivotal. It was at this time the Russians began using the information they had stolen to help Donald Trump and harm Hillary Clinton. And so the question is, why? What was happening in July, August of last year? And were U.S. persons involved? Here are some of the matters drawn from public sources alone, since that is all we can discuss in this setting, that concern us and we believe should concern all Americans. In early July, Carter Page, someone candidate Trump identified as one of his national security advisors, travels to Moscow on a trip approved by the Trump campaign. While in Moscow, he gives a speech critical of the United States and other Western countries for what he believes is a hypocritical focus on democratization and efforts to fight corruption. According to Christopher Steele, a former British intelligence officer, who is reportedly held in high regard by U.S. intelligence, Russian sources tell him that Page has also had a secret meeting with Igor Sechin, CEO of the Russian gas giant Rosneft. Sechin is reported to be a former KGB agent and close friend of Putin's. According to Steele's Russian sources, Page is offered brokerage fees by Sechin on a deal involving a 19% share of the company. According to Reuters, the sale of a 19.5% share of Rosneft later takes place with unknown purchasers and unknown brokerage fees. Also, according to Steele's Russian sources, the campaign is offered documents damaging to Hillary Clinton, which the Russians would publish through an outlet that gives them deniability, like WikiLeaks. The hacked documents would be in exchange for a Trump administration policy that de-emphasizes Russia's invasion of Ukraine and instead focuses on criticizing NATO countries for not paying their fair share. Policies which, even as recently as the President's meeting last week with Angela Merkel, have now presciently come to pass. In the middle of July, Paul Manafort, the Trump campaign manager and someone who was long on the payroll of pro-Russian Ukrainian interests, attends the Republican Party convention. Carter Page, back from Moscow, also attends the convention. According to Steele, it was Manafort who chose Page to serve as a go-between for the Trump campaign and Russian interests. Ambassador Kislyak, who presides over a Russian embassy in which diplomatic personnel would later be expelled as likely spies, also attends the Republican Party convention and meets with Carter Page and additional Trump advisors J.D. Gordon and Waleed Faris. It was J.D. Gordon who approved Page's trip to Moscow. Ambassador Kislyak also meets with Trump National Security Campaign Chair, and now Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Sessions would later deny meeting with Russian officials during his Senate confirmation hearing. Just prior to the convention, the Republican Party platform is changed, removing a section that supports the provision of lethal defensive weapons to Ukraine, an action that would be contrary to Russian interests. Manafort categorically denies involvement by the Trump campaign in altering the platform. But the Republican Party delegate who offered the language in support of providing defensive weapons to Ukraine states that it was removed at the insistence of the Trump campaign. Later, J.D. Gordon admits opposing the inclusion of the provision at the time it was being debated and prior to its being removed. Later in July and after the convention, the first stolen emails detrimental to Hillary Clinton appear on WikiLeaks. A hacker who goes by the moniker Guccifer2 claims responsibility for hacking the DNC and giving the documents to WikiLeaks. But leading private cybersecurity firms, including CrowdStrike, Mandiant, and ThreatConnect, review the evidence of the hack and conclude with high certainty that it was the work of APT-28 and APT-29, who are known to be Russian intelligence services. The U.S. intelligence community also later confirms that the documents were in fact stolen by Russian intelligence and Guccifer2 acted as a front. Also in late July, candidate Trump praises WikiLeaks, says he loves them, and openly appeals to the Russians to hack his opponent's emails, telling them that they will be richly rewarded by the press. On August 8th, Roger Stone, a longtime Trump political advisor and self-proclaimed political dirty trickster, boasts in a speech that he has communicated with Assange, and that more documents would be coming, including an October surprise. In the middle of August, he also communicates with a Russian cutout, Guccifer II, and authors a Breitbart piece denying Guccifer's links to Russian intelligence. Then later in August, Stone does something truly remarkable when he predicts that John Podesta's personal emails will soon be published. Trust me, he says, it will soon be Podesta's time in the barrel, hashtag Crooked Hillary. In the weeks that follow, Stone shows a remarkable prescience. I have total confidence that WikiLeaks and my hero, Julian Assange, will educate the American people soon, he says. Hashtag lock her up. Payload coming, he predicts. And 2 days later, it does. WikiLeaks releases its first batch of Podesta emails. The release of John Podesta's emails would then continue on a daily basis up until the election. On election day in November, Donald Trump wins. Donald Trump appoints one of his high-profile surrogates, Michael Flynn, to be his national security advisor. Michael Flynn has been paid by the Kremlin's propaganda outfit, RT, in the past, as well as another Russian entity. In December, Michael Flynn has a secret conversation with Ambassador Kislyak about sanctions imposed by President Obama on Russia over its hacking designed to help the Trump campaign. Michael Flynn lies about this secret conversation. The vice president unknowingly then assures the country that no such conversation ever happened. The president is informed that Flynn has lied and Pence has misled the country. The president does nothing. 2 weeks later, the press reveals that Flynn has lied and the president is forced to fire Mr. Flynn. The president then praises the man who lied, Mr. Flynn, and castigates the press for exposing the lie. Now, is it possible that the removal of the Ukraine provision from the GOP platform was a coincidence? Is it a coincidence that Jeff Sessions failed to tell the Senate about his meetings with the Russian ambassador, not only at the convention, but a more private meeting in his office and at a time when the U.S. election was under attack by the Russians? Is it a coincidence that Michael Flynn would lie about a conversation he had with the same Russian ambassador, Kislyak, about the most pressing issue facing both countries at the time they spoke? The U.S. imposition of sanctions over Russian hacking of our election designed to help Donald Trump. Is it a coincidence that the Russian gas company Rosneft sold a 19% share after former British intelligence officer Steele was told by Russian sources that Carter Page was offered fees on a deal of just that size? Is it a coincidence that Steele's Russian sources also affirmed that Russia had stolen documents hurtful to Secretary Clinton that it would utilize in exchange for pro-Russian policies that would later come to pass? Is it a coincidence that Roger Stone predicted that John Podesta would be a victim of a Russian hack and have his private emails published, and did so even before Mr. Podesta himself was fully aware that his private emails would be exposed? Is it possible that all of these events and reports are completely unrelated and nothing more than an entirely unhappy coincidence? Yes, it is possible. But it is also possible, maybe more than possible, that they are not coincidental, not disconnected, and not unrelated, and that the Russians use the same techniques to corrupt U.S. persons that they employed in Europe and elsewhere. We simply don't know, not yet, and we owe it to the country to find out. Director Comey, what you see on the dais in front of you in the form of this small number of members and staff is all we have to commit to this investigation. This is it. We are not supported by hundreds or thousands of agents and investigators with offices around the world. It is just us and our Senate counterparts. And in addition to this investigation, we still have our day job, which involves overseeing some of the largest and most important agencies in the country. Agencies which, by the way, are trained to keep secrets. I point this out for two reasons, and I'm wrapping up, Chairman. First, because we cannot do this work alone, and nor should we. We believe these issues are so important that the FBI must devote its resources to investigating each of them thoroughly. To do any less would be negligent in the protection of our country. We also need your full cooperation with our investigation so that we may have the benefit of what you know, and so that we may coordinate our efforts in the discharge of both our responsibilities. And second, I raise this because I believe that we would benefit from the work of an independent commission that can devote the staff and resources to this investigation that we do not have, and that can be completely removed from any political considerations. This should not be a substitute for the work that we in the Intelligence Committee should and must do, but as an important complement to our efforts, just as was the case after 9/11. The stakes are nothing less than the future of our democracy and liberal democracy, because we're engaged in a new war of ideas, not communism versus capitalism, but authoritarianism versus democracy and representative government. And in this struggle, our adversary sees our political process as a legitimate field of battle. Only by understanding what the Russians did can we inoculate ourselves from further Russian interference that we know is coming. Only then can we protect our European allies who are, as we speak, enduring similar Russian interference in their own elections. And finally, I want to say a word about our own committee investigation. You will undoubtedly observe in the questions and comments that our members make during today's hearing that the members of both parties share a common concern over the Russian attack on our democracy, but bring a different perspective on the significance of certain issues or the quantum of evidence we have seen in the earliest stages of this investigation. This is to be expected. The question most people have is whether we can really conduct this investigation in the kind of thorough and nonpartisan manner that the seriousness of the issues merit, or whether the enormous political consequences of our work will make that impossible. The truth is, I don't know the answer. But I do know this. If this committee can do its work properly, if we can pursue the facts wherever they lead, unafraid to compel witnesses to testify, to hear what they have to say, to learn what we will, and after exhaustive work reach a common conclusion, it would be a tremendous public service, and one that is very much in the national interest. So let us try. I thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I yield back.
That was a 15-minute, really 18-minute opening argument presenting evidence for Trump campaign collusion with Russia from the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff. They're about to question FBI Director James Comey and NSA Director Admiral Mike Rogers. This is live coverage on WNYC, Republican Chairman Devin Nunes.
To assure the committee that my team is doing its best to fulfill the various requests of this committee to support your ongoing investigations into this subject. Over the past weeks, NSA has been working closely with the committee to provide you the information that you require for your investigation, and I can assure you we will continue to do so. When we last met in January,
this is NSA Director Admiral Mike Rogers.
Intelligence community's assessment on assessing Russian activities and intentions in the recent U.S. elections. Today, more than 2 months after we issued this assessment, we stand by it as issued. There is no change in our confidence level on the assessment. Of course, the specifics of this assessment need to remain classified to protect sensitive sources and methods, so today I will limit my discussion to information in the public domain, and that of the publicly released intelligence community assessment. I hope you will understand that there are some issues I cannot discuss in an open session, nor will I be able to provide specifics in some areas. As the committee fully knows, the intelligence community has a long-standing policy of not discussing surveillance targeting information in particular cases, as to do so would invariably open the door to compel further disclosures in litigation or the release of classified information, all of which would be harmful to our national security. Like the committee, we are also greatly concerned about leaks of classified information, as they can reveal the sources and methods we employ to provide intelligence to American policymakers and warfighters and generate advantage for our nation while protecting its citizens and interests and their privacy. I also want to assure the committee that we take very seriously that obligation to protect U.S. persons' privacy. This applies to all stages of the production of foreign intelligence. But I'd like to emphasize one area in particular, the dissemination of U.S. person information. We at NSA have strict procedures in place to make sure that our reporting and the contents of our reporting are disseminated only to those that have strict need to know for valid purposes, which primarily means in support of the development of foreign policy and to protect national security. I do want to specifically mention that among the collection of authorities that we have to target foreign actors in foreign spaces, FISA Section 702 and Executive Order 12333 have been instrumental in our ability to produce the intelligence made available to the committee and others in gathering the SIGINT facts of foreign activity in this election cycle. It would be difficult to overstate the breadth and scale of malicious cyber activity occurring today. Our adversaries, including nation states, have not rested in trying to penetrate government systems, steal our private industry's intellectual property, and make even greater strides towards the development and achievement of cyber attack capabilities. We have a hardworking and dedicated team at NSA that works every day to generate insights on this activity and to thwart its effectiveness. But cyber defense is a team sport, and one of NSA's strongest partners in this effort is Director Comey's team at the FBI. And I'm glad to be able to describe here today how we are working together to help protect the nation and our allies, to include providing a better understanding of Russian intentions and capabilities. In light of the IC assessment and findings, I welcome your investigation into overall Russian activities targeting the previous U.S. elections. NSA continues to employ rigorous analytics standards, applying them in every aspect of our intelligence reporting. Our analysts have consistently proven to be reliable and thorough in their technical and analytic efforts in providing our policymakers and warfighters with SIGINT ammunition to make informed decisions to protect our nation's freedom and ensure the safety of its citizens. They are diligently continuing to monitor for additional reflections of Russian targeting of U.S. systems and those of our friends and allies around the world, to share that information with our IC colleagues and foreign counterparts, and to produce unbiased, unprejudiced, and timely reporting of SIGINT facts in their entirety. And I look forward to your questions. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Admiral Rogers. Director Comey, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, Ranking Member Schiff, members of the committee, thank you for including me in today's hearing. I'm honored to be here representing the people of the FBI. I hope we have shown you through our actions and our words how much we at the FBI value your oversight of our work and how much we respect your responsibility to investigate those things that are important to the American people. Thank you for showing that both are being taken very seriously. As you know, our practice is not to confirm the existence of ongoing investigations, especially those investigations that involve classified matters. But in unusual circumstances, where it is in the public interest, it may be appropriate to do so, as Justice Department policies recognize. This is one of those circumstances. I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts. As with any counterintelligence investigation, this will also include an assessment of whether any crimes were committed. Because it is an open, ongoing investigation and is classified, I cannot say more about what we are doing and whose conduct we are examining. At the request of congressional leaders, we have taken the extraordinary step, in coordination with the Department of Justice, of briefing this Congress's leaders, including the leaders of this committee, in a classified setting, in detail about the investigation. But I can't go into those details here. I know that is extremely frustrating to some folks, but it is the way it has to be, for reasons that I hope you and the American people can understand. The FBI is very careful in how we handle information about our cases and about the people we are investigating. We are also very careful about the way we handle information that may be of interest to our foreign adversaries. Both of those interests are at issue in a counterintelligence investigation. Please don't draw any conclusions from the fact that I may not be able to comment on certain topics. I know speculating is part of human nature, but it really isn't fair to draw conclusions simply because I say that I can't comment. Now, some folks may want to make comparisons to the past instances where the Department of Justice and the FBI have spoken about the details of some investigations. But please keep in mind that those involve the details of completed investigations. Our ability to share details with the Congress and the American people is limited when those investigations are still open, which I hope makes sense. We need to protect people's privacy. We need to make sure we don't give other people clues as to where we're going. We need to make sure that we don't give information to our foreign adversaries about what we know or don't know. We just cannot do our work well or fairly if we start talking about it while we're doing it. So we will try very, very hard to avoid that, as we always do. This work is very complex, and there is no way for me to give you a timetable as to when it will be done. We approach this work in an open-minded, independent way, and our expert investigators will conclude that work as quickly as they can, but they will always do it well, no matter how long that takes. I can promise you we will follow the facts wherever they lead. And I want to underscore something my friend Mike Rogers said. Leaks of classified information are serious, serious federal crimes for a reason. They should be investigated and, where possible, prosecuted in a way that reflects that seriousness so that people understand it simply cannot be tolerated. And I look forward to taking your questions.
Thank you, Director Comey. Admiral Rogers, I first want to go to you. On January 6th, 2017, the intelligence community assessment assessing Russian activities and intentions in recent U.S. elections stated that the types of systems Russian actors targeted or compromised were not involved in vote tallying. So my question as of today, Admiral Rogers, do you have any evidence that Russia cyber actors changed vote tallies in the state of Michigan?
No, I do not, but I would highlight we're a foreign intelligence organization, not a domestic intelligence organization. So it would be fair to say we are probably not the best organization to provide a more complete answer.
How about the state of Pennsylvania?
No, sir.
The state of Wisconsin?
No, sir.
State of Florida?
No, sir.
The state of North Carolina?
No, sir.
The state of Ohio.
This is live coverage of the House Intelligence Committee hearing on Russian hacking and possible Trump campaign conclusion and the illegal leaks, if there were illegal leaks of information regarding Trump aides' contacts with Russia. The question of right now is the chairman of the committee, Republican Devin Nunes. I will note that it was pretty big news when FBI Director Comey said just a minute ago that he is confirming that there is an investigation into Russian hacking and Trump campaign collusion. That was not on the record before. So now we know there is an official FBI investigation underway into Trump campaign collusion with the Russians. Though he said because it is all classified, so much of it, I cannot say more about what we're finding or who we're investigating. Let's see under questioning how far he is willing to go, along with Admiral Rogers, head of the NSA, who's being questioned by Congressman Nunes right now.
For the intelligence community's assessment on January 6th?
No, sir. If I spent time in this job worrying about unsourced media reporting, I'd never get any work done.
Thank you, Admiral. Director Comey, I remain extremely concerned about the widespread illegal leaks that you just referenced in your testimony. Just for the record, though, I want to get this on the record. Does the unauthorized disclosure of classified information to the press violate 18 U.S.C. 793, a section of the Espionage Act that criminalizes improperly accessing, handling, or transmitting national defense information?
Yes.
Would an unauthorized disclosure of FISA-derived information to the press violate 18 U.S.C. 798, a section of the Espionage Act that criminalizes disclosure of information concerning the communication and intelligence activities of the United States?
Yes, in addition to being a breach of our trust with the FISA court that oversees our use of those authorities.
Thank you, Director. At this time, I'm going to yield to Mr. Roney, who chairs our NSA Cyber Committee, for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to direct my questions first and foremost to Admiral Rogers to convey my thanks to the many men and women for their dedication at the NSA for keeping our country safe, as well as I want to talk about the recent media stories that may have led to confusion in the public about what the NSA is and is not legally collecting and the safeguards the NSA has put into place to protect personal data. So I'd like to clarify, as the chairman of the subcommittee on the NSA, I recently got to meet your deputy admiral last week out at the NSA, and we visited and spoke some of these things. And what we can talk about here today publicly, if you could go into, if you can't, you can't. But I think that this is important for the people in the room and listening outside understand. Is it true that the NSA would need a court order based on probable cause to conduct electronic surveillance on a U.S. person inside the United States?
Yes, sir.
And just to be clear, the section of the FISA that is expiring later this year, that's 702, which we'll be talking about a little bit, cannot be used to target U.S. persons or persons in the United States. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Section 702 focuses on non-U.S. persons outside the United States primarily, correct?
Yes, sir.
Do you believe that the Section 702 is important and valuable for U.S. national security?
Yes, sir.
So it's safe to say that without having this tool, it would be a threat to our national security.
It would significantly impact my ability to generate the insights that I believe this nation needs.
In the media, there's a lot of reporting about something called incidental collection. Can you talk about what incidental collection is?
Yes, sir. Incidental collection is when we are targeting a valid foreign target, for example, and in the course of that targeting, we either get a reference to a U.S. person or suddenly a U.S. person appears as part of the conversation. That's what we call incidental collecting.
And what do you do when something like that happens? If there's a U.S. person part of an incidental collection, what kind of safeguards are put in place to make sure that...
So it depends specifically on the legal authority that we're using to execute the collection in the first place, but in broad terms, realizing, again, it varies a little bit by the specific authority that we're using to conduct the collection. We step back and we ask ourselves first, are we dealing with a U.S. person here? Is there something that we didn't expect to encounter that we've now encountered? We'll ask ourselves what leads us to believe that it is a U.S. person. If we come to the conclusion that it is a U.S. person, then we ask ourselves, are we listening to criminal activity? Are we seeing something of imminent threat or danger, for example? Or are we just receiving something that has nothing to do with any of our valid collection authority? Based on that, we'll then take a series of actions.
In some We're going to jump in for a minute here while they're doing a fairly technical section of this hearing and talk about what we've heard so far with former CIA field officer and author Bob Baer at this Intelligence Committee in the House of Representatives hearing with the NSA Director, Admiral Michael Rogers, and the FBI Director, James Comey. Bob, do you have the same reaction that I do, that it was pretty big news that FBI Director Comey confirmed publicly that there is an investigation not only into Russian hacking, but also into Trump campaign collusion with the Russian hacking?
I think it was big. I mean, I think we all suspected the FBI was investigating this. This is a counter-espionage investigation. You know, with the evidence that Adam Schiff, the Democratic member of the House Intelligence Committee, presented, you could not conduct an investigation. The fact that Carter Page was in touch with effectively a KGB entity, the fact that the Steele report is been given credence in everything in the Steele report that he predicted came true, the fact that Roger Stone was in touch with Guccifer II, the hacker, all of that, the FBI had to get into it, but I think it's important. We now truly have a full-on investigation of possible collusion between Russian intelligence and the Trump campaign. And, boy, once this starts coming together, this is going to start looking like, to me, like Watergate.
In what respects?
We've got a president under attack here by law enforcement. Not under attack, under investigation. No one has been able to explain away the Roger Stone contacts, the sale of Rosneft, that it was predicted by Steele, and the rest of it. We actually have money passing hands, before the election. which is a former intelligence officer who did a lot of counter-espionage investigation. This whole thing stinks, and nobody has come forward on the Trump side to explain this away, as I just said.
The ranking Democrat on the committee, Adam Schiff, presented for, by my count, 18 minutes of what amounted to a prosecutor's opening argument for collusion by members of the Trump campaign, itemizing the contacts that Roger Stone, as a political aide to Donald Trump, and other people had with people in Russia, and then in Stone's case in particular, even predicting that John Podesta's emails were going to be made public, and then they were, and things like that. So Adam Schiff is playing the role of chief prosecutor?
I think he did a great job. If this were presented to a grand jury, a closed grand jury, I think a prosecutor could get an indictment against the people he named. And, you know, that's exactly what the FBI is doing. They're getting into the actual financials. Did Carter Page actually get paid for the selling of Rosneft? You know, and on and on and on. And we're not even getting into the bigger question of Trump business dealings, which is a can of worms in Russia and property
yeah.
deals.
Although that Carter Page piece, as presented by Adam Schiff, was new to me. Was it new to you that he was suggesting that Carter Page, as a Trump campaign foreign policy advisor, was profiting through business deals, if I understood Adam Schiff correctly, at the same time that he was discussing with Russians what Republican platform positions on Ukraine and things like that might be, that there was a business deal element to that trip?
In national security, because they withdrew from the campaign platform providing lethal assistance to the Ukraine, which the Russians have been, you know, adamantly opposed, and that's why they detested Hillary Clinton. They want to do anything they can to stop NATO cooperation with the Ukraine, and like I just said, lethal assistance. So it is quid pro quo. There's money involved, national security. You've got the whole question of how did Stone know that Podesta's emails were going to be hacked, unless there was collusion. I mean, it's not something you and I would have predicted. You know, I just think the case against Trump in Russia is really, really bad.
Though nothing has been brought up yet about Donald Trump himself. It's all these advisors.
Well, I mean, it's enough. I mean, Donald Trump was not meeting with the Russian ambassador cutting deals, but obviously people like Michael Flynn, who called the Russian ambassador to warn him about sanctions and said and he advised him not to react to those sanctions, because once Trump was in office, he would smooth this over. I mean, that is a clear-cut case of collusion, which is in a transcript, which was leaked. Improperly leaked, mind you, but it was still leaked, that Flynn was colluding with the Russians, and presumably it was in behalf of Trump.
Right now we continue with our special coverage of the House Intelligence Committee hearing on Russian meddling in the 2016 election and related issues. Let's go back into the hearing and see what's happening. Republican Congressman Tom Rooney of Florida is questioning NSA Director Rogers and FBI Director Comey.
I would have the authority to do that.
Who else would?
The 19 other individuals.
Would that include Director Comey?
I'm talking about
in the NSA alone.
Within the National Security Agency, and we're talking about NSA reporting.
But would people like Director Comey also be able to request that?
Yes.
And the Attorney General and Director Clapper, are those type of people also on this list?
Again, I'm not going to talk. In general, yes, they would be
generally
able to come
speaking,
and ask.
Generally speaking, not
they
with regard
to be able to come and ask, not going to talk about the specifics.
Okay.
For a little bit of context, Congressman Rooney's questioning has focused so far on the leaks of information, like about Michael Flynn's contacts with the Russians that got leaked, leaking classified information is a crime, and that's an aspect that the Republicans are particularly focused on, though both parties have acknowledged that this is a serious aspect of the hearing. So we go back in.
Help our ability to conduct national security
hurt.
Matters. Okay, if it hurts, so this leak, which through the 702 tool, which we all agree is vital, or you and I at least agree to that, do you think that leak actually threatens our national security? if it's a crime and if it's unveiling a masked person, and this tool is so important that it could potentially jeopardize this tool when we have to try to reauthorize it in a few months, if this is used against the ability of us to reauthorize this tool, and we can't get it done because whoever did this leak, or these nine people that did this leak, create such a stir, whether it be, you know, in our legislative process or whatever, that they don't feel confident that a U.S. person under the 702 program can be masked successfully and not leak to the press. Doesn't that hurt, that leak hurt our national security?
Yes, sir.
Can you think of any reason why somebody would want to leak the identity of a masked person?
No, sir. I mean, I have raised this directly with my own workforce over the course of the last few months to remind everyone part of the ethics of our profession, not just the legal requirement, but the ethics of our profession as intelligence professionals, is we do not engage in this activity. And I've also reminded the men and women of the National Security Agency, if I become aware of any...
Again, for further context, when the congressman is referring to a masked person, that would be General Flynn in this case. If the surveillance was of the Russian ambassador, an American citizen who happens to be talking to the Russian ambassador, Michael Flynn, is considered a masked person, and his name is not supposed to be revealed, which of course it was, to the press. We'll go back in.
If they are not held accountable, whether it by the NSA internally or by the FBI through conviction or investigation slash prosecution and slash conviction through the Attorney General's office of that crime, it is very difficult for us to be able to keep that sacred trust, to know that what we're doing is valid and what we're doing has no nefarious motivations and to us to be able to keep America safe without violating the constitutional protections that we all enjoy. Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure how much more time I have left. I just wanted to...
Congressman, can I make one comment if I could? I apologize.
Yes,
it comes to my mind based on your question. I just want to remind everyone that in general, FISA collection on targets in the United States has nothing to do with 702. I just want to make sure we're not confusing the two things here. 702 is collection overseas against non-U.S. persons.
Right, and what we're talking about here is, incidentally, if a U.S. person is talking to a foreign person that we're listening to, whether or not that person is unmasked.
I just want to make sure we understand
right.
The context, that's all.
And whether or not somebody in the intelligence community that we put the trust in is going to leak that information to the press for whatever reason. And I'm not even going to get into the gratuitous, you know, what that reason may be. But it's really going to hurt the people on this committee and you all in the intelligence community when we try to retain this tool this year and trying to convince some of our colleagues that this is really important for national security, when somebody in the intelligence community says, you know what, the hell with it. I'm going to release this person's name because I'm going to get something out of it. We're all going to be hurt by that if we can't reauthorize this tool. Do you agree with that?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, do I have enough time to talk about the letter that the committee sent? The committee sent to you on March 15th a letter to Admiral Rogers and to Director Comey. Have you had a chance to look at this letter? I think that you've actually...
Yes, sir. I've given you a reply on the
right.
17th.
Just real quickly, because I don't want to take up any more time, can you give us a sense of how many unmasked U.S. persons' identities were disseminated by the NSA from June 2016 to June 2017?
No, sir. As I have indicated, we're in the process of compiling that information. I will provide it to the committee, but until that work is done, I am not going to comment.
Can you tell us whether any of those disseminations broadly were involved U.S. people relating to presidential candidates Donald J. Trump or Hillary Clinton and their associates in 2016?
I won't answer until I complete the research, sir.
Assuming that the NSA disseminated unmasked U.S. persons' information relating to the Trump or Clinton campaigns, would that have been a reason for such unmasking?
I apologize. I don't truly understand the question.
Let me just move on to the next one.
All right.
Along those lines, if the NSA had wanted to disseminate unmasked U.S. persons' information related to either the presidential campaign, who in the NSA would have approved such disseminations?
Again, it would have been one of the 20, and I provided that in my initial response to the committee. I've outlined the procedures. I've outlined the specific 20 individuals.
Thank you, Admiral. I appreciate your answers. I look forward to working with you on the subcommittee moving forward. And, Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. Mr. Gowdy is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Comey, we will begin this line of questioning, and then we'll finish it the next round. FISA and other similar related...
This is Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy of South Carolina questioning now.
...to our national security, and many of us on both sides of the aisle believe FISA and similar counterterrorism programs prevent terrorist attacks and save American lives. But FISA and other surveillance programs are intentionally designed to preserve the privacy of U.S. citizens. They are intentionally designed to ensure the information is collected and used only for legitimate national security and criminal investigative purposes. There are statutory safeguards. There are warrants based on probable cause. There is a FISA court that is involved. There are audits on the back end, and we think so highly of this material. It is a felony punishable by up to 10 years in federal prison to unlawfully disseminate it. All of this was done to make sure this information gathered remains protected as it relates to U.S. citizens. The way I view it, Director Comey, the American people have an agreement with their government. We are going to give you the tools to keep us safe, even if it infringes on our privacy some. We're going to give you the tools. And government, in return, promises to safeguard the privacy of U.S. citizens. And when that deal is broken, it jeopardizes American trust in these surveillance programs. So let me ask you, do you agree FISA is critical to our national security?
I do.
Do you agree programs like FISA were intentionally designed to safeguard the identity of U.S. persons?
Yes. There are other important elements of it, but that's the primary goal, I believe.
It wasn't an afterthought. It wasn't an accident. These are intentional safeguards that we put in place to protect U.S. citizens. Is that correct?
Correct.
Do you agree much of what is learned from these programs is classified or otherwise legally protected?
All FISA applications, review by the court, collection by us pursuant to our FISA authority is classified.
The dissemination of which is a felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison?
Sure, dissemination, unauthorized dissemination.
Unauthorized dissemination.